Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
And Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
Yes, for us, it is the day after Christmas, Feast of the Holy Family. So let's talk a bit about our prep for Christmas. So obviously, when we last left off, we were still unpacking, still cleaning up, desperately trying to get things in a state where we could even fit a Christmas tree in our living room, apart from all the boxes and things, which we managed to do.
We did. I had faith.
Yes.
I knew we were going to do it.
Yeah. Well, I knew we were going to do it. It was whether when we were going to get it done, would it be before Christmas Eve? We did finally get the pod emptied and that got taken away. That was good. So the dumpster's gone. The pod is gone.
We still have lots and lots of boxes to unpack.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I would say that half of what's filling our living room are empty boxes that we need to figure out a way to like get somebody to take them. Somebody who's moving. Or a third. Then there's like a third of what's in the living room is stuff we've said we want to get rid of.
Right.
Old clothes and bins of things and old toys and whatnot. And then there's another third of stuff that needs to get unpacked.
Right.
Plus the old couch and chair that are going to go not too long. So, yeah, we're so close. It's so close. In any case, we got our tree up. And that was, what did we do that? We did it on the 23rd. I think it was the 23rd.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Because we put the water in and everything. And then we hadn't decorated yet, thankfully. So Christmas Eve morning, we came out. And who discovered it? You?
No, somebody, a child came and said, there's water. There's a puddle of water in the floor.
Now, given everything we've been through in the past 3 months.
The words puddle of water sent terror into my heart.
It's like post-traumatic stress. It's like, yeah. What? There was a huge puddle of water.
It was going down the hall.
Down the hall.
I really.
Flashback.
Seriously. I'm not even exaggerating. I had a moment. It was horrible.
It might have been the 22nd, the evening of the 22nd.
Yeah, I think that we finally got everything.
Yeah, because we had set it up. Then there was a huge puddle of water. What it was is the Christmas tree stand leaked. It had a crack in it, which we hadn't noticed. And so I put the tree back out on the porch, on the patio, and the stand, I looked at it, yep, and it's like, oh, great. Now I've got to find a Christmas tree stand at the last minute. And we both remembered that at one point we'd had two stands, but we both also remembered we'd gotten rid of one.
I thought we'd thrown away the old one because right. That's what one does when you
has an old stand.
It.
So the morning of Christmas Eve, very early, I went out to find a stand.
I thought it was the 23rd that you were running around looking for a stand.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It wasn't Christmas Eve.
Okay. So, all right. So, yeah, because if it was Christmas. Yeah, because on the morning of Christmas Eve, I was going over to the lobster barn. So it was the 22nd. So anyway, regardless, I went to Lowe's, I went to Walmart, I went to Target. I felt like a dad in a Christmas movie. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just before Christmas, and Christmas will be ruined if he doesn't find the last Christmas tree stand available in Massachusetts. There was not a Christmas tree stand to be found. We were posting on Facebook. Does anybody have an extra one? I sent out a text to my brothers. Do either of you guys happen
actually,
to have an extra?
We had a couple offers, but by the time right. We got the offers.
Right. So I was going out to the shed for something.
You know, Isabella said.
I have a terrible memory, apparently.
Yeah. Isabella said, I am sure that you did not throw away the old stand. I am sure that it is in the shed. Go look for it.
Right.
And she was quite insistent. And
so
she was
I went out to the
quite
shed.
Right.
I looked in an empty storage container, or I thought it was empty. and there was the new Christmas tree stand. And in fact, the old stand...
It was the old stand that was leaking.
That was leaking. It was the old gigantic stand that we said, this is too big and it's old and rusty, so we should get rid of it. We should replace it. And I said at the time, after we got the new stand, I should keep a spare around because you never know, you might need a spare stand. And then this year, for whatever reason, that was the one I saw, thought that was the current, the current stand. My memory is terrible.
It's terrible.
It's kind of scary getting old. I mean, this is really bad. So it turned out to be a newer stand. It's smaller, which is fine. It fit the tree.
It's smaller is good. It doesn't have, that's why we got it, because we didn't want the gigantic one that took up like
everything,
an acre of land.
Right. So. Disaster averted. We got the stand in the house and put the tree in it, and all is right. We ended up getting the tree decorated. We had our, it's interesting getting the tree decorated. They're old enough now that where they do most of the work now.
Yeah.
I put the lights on and you kind of coordinate the handing out of the ornaments.
Yeah. I unpack the ornaments and hand them out so that it's not like a mad rush. Like I hand them to the children one at a time.
Yeah. Five pairs of hands diving into a box at the same time.
Yeah.
So, but they do all of the hanging the ornaments and where do they go and all that sort of stuff. And we just hang back and I do my annual time lapse video, which is now a tradition of them doing it. And so that went well. So that was done, yes, on the 23rd. So on the 24th, we have our usual, we like to go to the Midnight Mass, as we've said in previous years. We don't always all get to go once in a while. It's more often that we don't all go to the same Mass.
Right.
Getting all the children up for Midnight Mass is sometimes difficult. Although Lucy did not go to bed at all.
She did. She tried to lay down and go to sleep, and she could not fall asleep. She's been going to bed
really late
at like 11 o'clock most nights.
She's a night owl like you.
Yeah, she likes to read in bed.
Yeah,
and her big sisters who share a room with her yell at her
because they want to go to bed,
but they're not actually very effective at making her go to sleep on time.
It's kind of funny. They don't just turn out the light on her. In any case, she stayed up with me in the other room, and then we all got up and went. But Anthony was having some concern about going, and he just was not going to go. And then you, your stomach hurt.
I started feeling really horrible. I don't know if it was like I ate too much or too many sweet and rich things, or I don't know. I just did not feel like up to going and sitting through a long Mass.
Yeah. So it worked out. You stayed home with him. I took the rest and we went to Midnight Mass, which was nice. There had been a little snow, a little flurries that day, not much snow, but we had, you know, around here we got like flurries. So it's nice to have little flurries. And it's always beautiful. The music is always good. We had our, the Haitian cantor, who we hadn't seen in a long time, was there. That was nice to see him. And Father Matt did the homily. I'll talk about that in a little bit. And then we got home around 1. Kids went right to bed. They were like, I'm going to bed.
They did not go right to bed. Isabella like puttered around for a good half hour.
Really?
Yeah.
They were all like, oh, I'm so tired. I'm going right to bed. Anyway, you didn't get to bed till like 3 or something.
It was later than that. yeah.
But you had to get up to go to the 10:30 Mass with Anthony in the morning.
I did.
So that meant we had to, like, at, what was it, 8:30, 9? I had to wake you up.
It was 8:30.
Like, I'm sorry, but I had to wake you up because there was no way they were going to wait till after the 10:30 Mass. There was no way you would have gotten Anthony out the door to Mass if he hadn't opened his presents and stocking. So that happened. So I got you up. And
I was really tired all day.
We've talked before, but for those who may not remember or new listeners, we don't make a big deal of presents on Christmas morning. There is a stocking full of small things and one present per child from Santa.
Yeah, Santa does not bring lots and lots of stuff.
Right. Our main gift giving day is Epiphany. That's when they get presents from us and from your parents and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
They do. It's really sweet. They do make gifts for each other.
Some of which get given at Christmas and some given at Epiphany. But
right, or sometimes both. Like Lucy made us cards and put some of her Hershey Kisses that she'd been given as a gift from someone else at Scouts for you and me, for me. They'll package up a precious toy that's theirs, but that they know like one of the other kids really likes to play with. So they'll package it up and give it to them. That sort of thing.
Yes. Although Ben did a gag gift for Anthony. He gave Anthony one of Anthony's own toys that he had been playing with.
Right.
And that Anthony had wanted back.
Right. Although was it Anthony gave Ben a coupon for the next time Ben wants to, for a future time when Ben wants to have an iPad turn. In order to get an iPad turn, they have to do a chore. Anthony will do the chore for him. He didn't check with us first to make sure it was okay, but.
Oh, I had suggested actually coupons for chores.
Oh, okay.
As something that my family had done in the past when we were kids.
Okay. So that's good. I mean, it's a nice gesture. So that was really nice. Mostly Legos, although the girls, the two older girls, they had Star Wars figures, Black Series. Black Series are they're more finely detailed and more articulated than most regular action figures.
They're really nicely detailed.
Yeah. So Dark Rey for Sophie. So Rey, who in her vision from Rise of Skywalker when she had turned to the dark side. So that one for Sophie, that fits. And that was a good choice. And then Padme for Bella. They have a bunch of other ones that they already had.
They were both thrilled with the choices of figures that they got.
And then Lego sets, Star Wars Lego sets for the other three.
Yeah.
So that was good.
Everybody was happy. Nobody got a toy that they'd already had in the past.
That has happened before.
Which has happened. Yeah, there's nothing like a child disappointed because they got for Christmas the toy that they already owned.
Right.
Or they got two of the same thing, like from a godparent and from Santa.
Yeah. So that was good. And they, you know, had a little time to play. And then you and Anthony went to Mass. We had lunch. We had a Christmas dinner. And, or as they were debating over whether it should be called brunch or Brenner. And I said, it's Brenner, Yule Brenner, because it's on Christmas. Get it? Yule Brenner? Yule Brenner!
Uh-huh.
That was hysterical. That was so funny when I did that one. I did that unintentionally, too. Anyway, after lunch, we hung out. Would we watch something on Christmas Day?
No, we didn't did have time the dishes, for that. And then that was about it.
Right.
I did a lot of the dishes, and then I went to go lay down in the bed and close my eyes for a few minutes, and I was out cold.
Yes. And so we were due to go to my brother's house for my family around 4-ish, and you were out. And I was like, I knew you hadn't been feeling well, and I knew you had stayed up nearly all night. So I was like, I'm not going to wake her. So I took the kids, and we went over and hung out for a couple hours, maybe 2.5 hours.
It was quite a long time. I had time to watch it. A movie.
Yeah, I think it was like 2.5 hours.
And sleep.
We were there.
And read.
Yeah, and it's a half hour there. So, you know, we were probably gone for 3 hours or so. Yeah, actually, they started asking me to go because they were really tired, the kids.
They were all really, really tired on Christmas.
Yeah. And again, they get presents from their aunts and uncles and their godparents. And so that's another reason why we don't go all out on Christmas for presents. Just because they get more stuff.
Yeah, we had realized fairly early on that between if we gave them all their like piles of presents and they got piles of presents from grandparents and godparents, they got it was overwhelmed.
Overwhelming. Yeah,
like we got overwhelmed. They got burned out on gift opening, and it was just became like
a slog.
Yeah,
yeah. So I think everything we got from family was not only just Star Wars related, but probably Grogu related, much of it. Both boys got pillows with Grogu on it. Did Bella ever give you the charcuterie board?
No.
My sister gave us a charcuterie board, like a serving board. It's not a cutting board, but a serving board with Grogu on it and Merry Christmas. They got, a remote control Grogu in a pram, which is really loud.
Very loud.
And it's a group gift, so that means they fight over it. And then they got a group Lego set of a big Grogu, which they fought over, argued about.
We had decided a while back that group presence to them was just counterproductive.
Yes.
And we've pretty much stopped giving them group presence because while it seems like a great idea, like we could get them one big Lego set instead of five smaller ones. Yeah. And that would be like, cool. Like we can't afford to give them all big Lego sets. So they all get little ones. But it just doesn't work.
Right. They're screaming of, you're doing it wrong, and losing their mind over it. Yeah. I mean, it would be nice if we could do one big set, like, because we've run out of all of these small, inexpensive Star Wars Lego sets. It might be time to move to Marvel, because we've started watching those. But, like, everything is $150 and up now, like all the ones that they haven't done yet.
I really, really wish that Lego would do more of the
smaller,
you know, medium sized
stuff in the $40-$50 range that would be very nice birthday and Christmas presents.
Right. They do, you know, a small handful of them. And then once you've got them all that's left are the really, really cool, expensive ones that we can't afford to do.
And even if we could afford them, we don't have any room for them. Like those things are gigantic. I've got a set. The International Space Station one that I haven't done yet because I'm going to need a place to put it when I'm done. You know, and so maybe I'll put it in the boys' room or something.
There's no room in there.
No, there isn't. I know. But, I mean, I have the Saturn V here, and it's awesome, but it's big. So I might have to rearrange things to make it fit. But, yeah, so presents. The remote control toy that sounds really loud while it's rolling around on our new wooden floors and bashing into things. Like, I can only stand it for, like, 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's...
Then it's like, okay, time to turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
Once the batteries in it die, I'm not sure I'm going to allow them to put new batteries in.
Yeah. When they were little toys with batteries, the batteries would last maybe a day or two, and then they would be gone. And then suddenly, like, there was no way to put new batteries in.
Oh, I'm sorry, it's all used up now.
Oops. I do not have high tolerance for toys.
Noisy toys.
That are noisy.
Oh, yeah. We have noisy kids. Never mind noisy toys. So, yeah. So that was, and then of course today we went to Mass again and just, we hung out. We watched a movie. We watched Avengers.
Avengers.
And so
it was good.
We have finished phase one of, the MCU and on to phase two. So
it was really fun to watch the Avengers with the kids.
Yeah.
It was like, oh my gosh, it was a fun movie. It was super fun.
Oh, they get so excited. They laugh. It was hysterical when the Hulk smashes puny god Loki. I mean, they thought that was hysterical. Yeah, it was like watching it for the first time again.
It really was.
Yeah, they had fun. So that was good. That was good. So that's what we've been doing, of course. And, you know, everybody's been celebrating Christmas. And so that's how we celebrated ours. So the one thing I didn't talk about was the food, because there has been lots of, you've done so much cooking, baking, just you alone have been doing so much baking. You've been making up for lost time.
I have definitely, I missed my kitchen. I missed baking. Because I missed making dinner when we were away, but I didn't have my baking stuff. I didn't have my KitchenAid mixer for kneading bread and just... I don't know. I just was not up to much baking in rental houses.
Right. That makes sense.
While we were away. So I've missed it. I really do enjoy baking. And so, yeah, making up for lost time. I made a huge batch of fruitcake.
So let's stop and talk a little bit about fruitcake. Most people think fruitcake, oh, yuck, that hard as a rock, dense thing that could survive in the apocalypse. But that's not your fruitcake.
Well, actually,
we did mention that you were soaking the fruit.
I was soaking the fruit.
In the bourbon. Yeah.
So you soak the fruit in a lot of bourbon. And then once the fruitcake is baked, you soak the fruitcake in a lot of bourbon.
You basically used
most of a bottle of bourbon.
You pour the bourbon over. You let it sit and absorb. You pour more bourbon over. You sit and absorb over several days' time. And you don't have to refrigerate it because you're basically preserving it in alcohol.
Yeah. These will last a well-bourboned fruitcake. Will actually last for years. And it gets a little bit dry and crumbly, but still edible.
Well,
and still
add more bourbon.
Real tasty. I actually had one that I think lasted 3 years. That was the year that I used sherry because that was the original recipe I had, which I did not like as well as the bourbon. And so it lasted a lot longer. One of them got lost in the back of a cabinet and I forgot that it was there. And then I found it like a year later. It was still, really tasty, I have to say.
That's funny. All right. So you made fruitcake.
Four fruitcakes.
You also made cinnamon rolls for Christmas morning. That's tradition.
Yep. It's nice to have hot baked good on Christmas morning.
So this was the Alton Brown recipe? Mostly.
Partially. I looked at Alton Brown for baking directions, but honestly, I just made my usual bread loaf without actually measuring anything.
Ah, okay.
It's just sweet bread dough with cinnamon wrapped up around some cinnamon.
Right.
I know a lot of people swear by Alton Brown's recipe. I don't even follow a recipe when
okay. Now, you usually put a cream cheese frosting on it, but we were low on cream cheese. So I suggested...
There is evidently a national cream cheese shortage.
There actually is, yeah. So I recommended an orange glaze,
yeah,
and that came out really good.
I have fond memories of the cinnamon rolls in a can with the orange glaze from childhood. Those mm-hmm. were always my favorite, so I went with it. It's not as good as cream cheese frosting, but it's still...
They were pretty darn good.
Pretty darn tasty.
Yeah, I'm not... I have no complaints.
I think I did not use enough sugar in the cinnamon sugar mixture in the middle of the roll.
Perhaps.
And maybe not quite enough butter, too.
I think it could have used more butter. It was not as creamy and rich as it usually is. It's a little drier than you... Yeah. A little bit. Still, pretty darn good.
Yeah.
So, Christmas Eve, as people know, I think, if they've listened to us for very long, we do the Sicilian tradition of seafood. Sicilians have a tradition of seven fishes. We've discovered that seven is way too many. So
We
usually end up with five different kinds of seafood on the table. This year, it was, as usual, lobster. And I know people think that's extravagant, but we live 20 miles from the New England coast. It is not as expensive as it is, perhaps, and probably where you are. We have a place just down the street where I get it from. It's a bit of a Christmas reach, shall we say? Instead of buying presents, we're buying Christmas Eve dinner. But in addition, I got a couple of stuffed quahogs. Quahogs are big clams, so they scoop out the middle and they chop it up and they mix it with breading and stuff, and you bake it like that. Some scallops in a lemon butter sauce. Lemon garlic butter sauce.
That was so good.
Yeah, that came out really good this time. And there was... So one of the things I've been doing, when I go to the grocery store, they'll have stuff on sale, like in the frozen seafood section. And I bought a few things and have been kind of socking them away in the freezer.
Right. So we got some fairly cheap.
Yeah. There was lobster bites, which are basically small little lobster croquettes.
Yeah, little croquettes.
I don't know how much lobster's in them, frankly, but, you know.
They're pretty tasty, I have to say.
But they tasted pretty good.
They had a nice little spicy kick to them,
yeah.
And I ate far too many of them, which might have contributed to not feeling so great.
Yeah. Then there was also some shrimp. I had bought, a bag of frozen shrimp a while ago, so that was in there. And then the lobster. Did I miss anything? I think it was five. In any case, I buy one for each of us. You don't like lobster, so I don't. You like lobster, okay, but you don't care to have a whole lobster.
Yeah.
I fixed it before I went on. And the other kids all want to have. So the older girls and Lucy are very, they're like, oh, can you, before we sit down, can you take the meat out of the shells for us? So I do that for them. But the boys are like, no, I want to do it.
Because they're boys.
And then I end up having to do it during dinner, but partially. Ben actually took care of most of what he needed to do.
He was pretty impressive. He did a pretty impressive job cleaning that lobster, I have to say.
Yeah, he did okay. Anthony needed a little coaching, some help. Here, hold it like this, twist like this. They were hard shells, so some of the cracking the shell, he just doesn't have the hand strength yet. Plus the spiny bits can be a little painful. So I took care of some, but he did okay too. None of them ate their entire lobster. All of them had leftover meat on the plate, which is fine, because we'll get to that in a minute.
Yep. Yeah, I also made like a loaf of challah bread to go with it. And
we did have a vegetable, didn't we?
We had.
You insist on a vegetable every year. The token veggie. Was that the peas and corn? Or was that on Christmas Day?
Christmas Day, I did peas and corn.
Oh.
I don't.
Oh, the caprese.
Oh, yeah. I did a caprese salad, some fresh basil and mozzarella.
It was actually a nice counterpoint. It was nice. And we had a salad.
Yeah, you made green salad for those who eat green salad.
For the four oldest of us. So, so that worked. So that was pretty good. For Christmas Day dinner, you had decided to do lasagna. I think we did talk about that last time, the trying to come to a conclusion about what kind of lasagna we were going to do. But I think it came out really great.
Yeah, I made that Christmas Eve and baked it Christmas Eve and then... Yep. And then refrigerated it. And so all we had to do was warm it up again.
Although
Christmas Day,
it took a lot longer to warm up than we'd anticipated.
I made a really big lasagna. I made it in my big roasting pan as opposed to my 13x9. And it did take a lot longer to reheat than I'd expected.
Yeah, I have no problem with having lots of leftover lasagna.
I should have put it in earlier. No, or two smaller pans.
Two smaller pans or put it in earlier. Yeah. That was unexpected, the length of time it took to reheat. Because it was a mass of cold, dense food.
It was so good,
but it was so really good.
I really like baking it the day before you're going to eat it, because lasagna is so much better the second day.
Yes.
And so I think just building that in and just planning to eat it the second day after you cook it.
Yes.
Is the best.
And by the strangest, weirdest of coincidences, everyone in my family separately decided to make lasagna for Christmas dinner. Both of my oldest sister is staying with my younger sister right now because she's recovering from a surgery. And she's the famous one in the family for her lasagna. Francesca's lasagnas are the best. No offense, but Francesca's lasagnas are the best. Anyone, anywhere. Sorry.
It's hard to compete with somebody whose name is Francesca.
Well, yes,
frankly.
This is true. So they made a lasagna, but then my brother John made a lasagna. My brother Bernie had lasagna. Everyone independently had lasagna. I'm not sure what was in the air, but that was kind of funny.
I mean, it's not unknown for Francesca to bring lasagna to family
on Christmas. Yeah. So that's probably in our minds. But we've had like roasts before. Like last year we did a roast. We've done roast beef roast a few years, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Lasagna was a good call. I was really pleased.
Well, not only because it was really good, but also it just was easier because you'd cooked it the day before. Then there was just a few dishes to prepare. We had broccoli with hollandaise sauce, and
I really liked not doing a lot of cooking on Christmas, and I think I'm looking to repeat this again next year.
I wouldn't mind doing a roast again sometime.
If you do the
roast.
But
that would be me. Yeah, it would be on me. I cook the meat, so that's fine. But this was a good call this year. I lasagna on Christmas is fine by me. The other thing, well, then today, I guess you mentioned, so tonight was leftovers. Actually, I want to come back to tonight because I want to talk about the ham.
Okay.
So we mentioned in November that while we were homeless, that one of my friends, who's the cub master of the kids' Cub Scout pack, had been talking to someone from the Rotary Club. They do Thanksgiving dinner packages for people who are in need every year. And they had an extra one and they'd given it to us. And so it has a turkey and all the fixings and all that sort of stuff. And we'd gotten one then. And it was nice. And we cooked it at our Airbnb and that was good. Well, he did it again. Like he had told them again that this past week that if they had an extra one that we could use it. And it's probably because we have five kids, and he knows that I work for a nonprofit, so there's not a lot of extra cash. And we'd just gone through this whole other thing. So they set one aside for me, like an extra one, and I'd picked it up, but they hadn't put the ham in it. And it was like, so they called him, and he called me, and he's like, just go back tomorrow and pick up the ham, from them. They forgot to put it in there. They feel bad. I'm like, okay, no problem. So I went back, and they're like, here's another box. A whole nother
box with
with actually additional things. So like it has two kinds of potatoes, like yellow potatoes and red potatoes. It had cans of vegetables. It had margarine. Don't really use margarine. Got to figure out what to do with that.
Lots of cookies.
So we had two tins of cookies, two dozen eggs, a ham, a gallon of milk. I mean, just all this stuff. We use it all. And the ham is great. We buy ham once in a while. The best thing about ham is if I make a big, you know, like a ham, or not like a ham, a big ham, just ham, pig-like, is you can get a bunch of meals out of it.
I love buying a ham, and they were so expensive this year. I kind of got sticker shock after Thanksgiving. I usually pick one up, and they did not go on as really good knows, sale yeah, this year.
Everything's been expensive. So we had the ham the first night. We just, you know, baked ham. And then the next night, you made ham and mushroom quiche.
Ham and spinach.
Ham and spinach. Yeah. Yeah. Quiche. So there's meal two. And then tonight, for dinner, we had fried rice with ham. So that's meal three. And then we still get some ham left over and the bone. So we're going to make like pea soup or bean soup of some sort.
Not to mention that the quiche like was several lunches. I mean, there's still half a quiche in there.
Right. And Lucy, I mean, and actually some of the others would just eat ham for lunch, you know, going on. But like just even for dinners, at least four dinners. So it seems expensive, but you get four dinners out of it. So it's not a bad deal. So that was really nice. But so along with the fried rice, the ham fried rice we had for dinner, we also took the leftover meat from the lobster, which was like at least a pound and a half of meat.
There was a lot of meat.
There was
meat
a
left.
Lot of meat. And including the legs, which I used a can in order to not mess up your baking rolling pins and get you mad at me. I used a can to squeeze the meat out of the legs, which worked out really well. But you made an amazing lobster bisque. Mm-hmm. It was so good. What was different about it this time? Because it was better than the bisque you have made before.
I thought I made chowder last time, not bisque. I think that
you've
was
made,
the difference.
But you've made bisque lobster bisque before.
I don't know. I googled a recipe, and this one was like you made a mirepoix, but then you also like cooked the herbs with it, and you added some. I added some Aleppo pepper, and it had you add a little bit of chicken bouillon to that. And then lots of tomato paste, and then you added flour and you cooked that. So like it got really, really thick and dark.
Yeah, like it was like a roux.
And then we had, you had made stock with both the shrimp shells and the lobster shells.
Right. So I'd cooked the lobster in the pot with a couple inches of water. So I'd steamed them in the water and I'd save that. And then when I cooked the shrimp, I peeled the shrimp, but then I also put the shells and the shrimp themselves in the pot and boiled it so to get the flavor from the shells. And then I saved that and I, you know, filtered out all the shells and then combined them and boiled them down so that it was like 2 quarts of highly concentrated, basically shellfish stock.
I think the shellfish stock made a huge difference.
Yeah.
I used a really nice white wine. And
is that the sweet Riesling? No.
No, not the Riesling. I don't think it was a Riesling.
We had that sweet Riesling, the
Chateau Saint-Michel Riesling. I would not use that for cooking.
No, but that was so good. We had that with the seafood dinner.
No, it was like a Chardonnay, but it was like a really nice fruity wine and heavy cream, lots of heavy cream.
So before you put the lobster in, when you put the stock in, you also use the immersion blender.
Right, you puree it really nicely, so it's a thick puree.
Yeah.
And then you add the, this was one of the things that I found a recipe that had you cook the lobster meat very, very, very short cook time, just
it's
a
already
minute.
Cooked.
Right.
Yeah.
And you sauteed some garlic and herbs in butter. And then you throw the lobster meat and you just cook it for like a minute just to warm it up a bit. And then you put it into the bisque.
Uh-huh. Is that what you did?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So that it kind of infuses the meat itself with that buttery, garlicky flavor. And then you're adding more garlic and butter to the soup, too.
Well, and of course, I had thrown the solidified butter from the dipping sauce from the Christmas Eve in with the lobster itself too.
There was a lot of butter in that bisque.
Very buttery. Very good. Very good. And you made some croutons to go with it. So it was really good.
Oh yeah. I used some leftover baguette from our favorite French bakery. And I diced that up and toasted it with some garlic and butter and
it sounds pretentious.
Parsley and
some basil. Baguette from our favorite French bakery. They sell it at the grocery store. But yes, it is from our favorite French bakery. But yeah, it was really good, though.
I love homemade croutons, and I could just like eat an entire bowl full.
So, yeah, so that's, I mean, it's a lot of good, as you were saying earlier. So I think we've got caught up on my desire to do a lot of cooking. Let's take it easy for a few days.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do a sort of a post-holiday not cooking very much.
Well, we're still going to do the soup, the ham soup. I want to get like either the, like a bean, ham and bean soup or I love the split pea soup.
I really wanted to do, Bella and I especially love the 15 bean soup.
Yeah.
They did not have the 15 bean mix at the grocery store, and I was really sad.
I have to go drop something off that I'm returning to Amazon at Whole Foods.
Maybe they'll have a 15 bean.
Maybe they'll have
soup.
I'll take a look mix. And see. Yeah.
I don't know why, but it's the mix of the beans, like all the different beans together are greater than the sum of the parts.
Something like that. Yes.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. I'm not really a big bean soup fan. Split pea soup, all eatable, and it's okay. But
oh, I love split pea soup.
A bowl of split pea soup is about all I want. just one bowl, and I'm done.
Split pea soup with a shot of sherry and sour cream.
But
yeah.
But 15 bean soup. I don't know.
I love soup anyway. So one of my favorite kinds of foods is soup. All right, so that's a lot of what we've been eating. So let's talk about what we've been watching mostly. I've finished a book, but we'll talk about that in a second. I want to talk about how I've done with reading this year, too. But let's talk about stuff we've been watching. I'm going to start by talking about what I watched on Christmas Eve with Lucy was the 1999 Christmas Carol starring Patrick Stewart.
I actually watched a good chunk of that with you, too, but then I got tired and I went and lay down.
So I'd heard about it as one being one of the best, as being faithful to the book, to the letter of the book. And it was short. It was only an hour and a half. I thought it went really quick. And it originally aired on, I want to say TNT. So it was like, it was a TV movie.
Version. Right.
Patrick Stewart was, of course, awesome.
I mean, he's Patrick Stewart. You can't go wrong with Patrick Stewart.
All-star cast. The Bob Cratchit was Richard Grant, who you'd recognize him if you saw him. But then there was the guy from Ted Lasso, who is the team manager, was in it. He was great, as well as the lady who runs the local pub. She was in it as well as Mrs. Fezziwig. Just a whole like bunch of people you recognize from different things. And so the cast was really great. The story was good. This even had the scene, which is apparently in the book, but is in none of the other filmed versions, where on Christmas morning he goes to church. Like he stops in at church and he slides into a pew and sings the hymn, the carols with the people.
I liked that. Patrick Stewart in church singing hymns on Christmas morning.
Yeah.
It felt really right.
And like most of the versions have him waking up on Christmas morning, sending the boy with the turkey to, you know, the giant turkey or goose, it changes depending on the version to Bob Cratchit's house and then showing up with a bunch of toys.
Uh-huh.
But that's not in the book, apparently. And in this case, he doesn't show up at their house. He just sends it and tells them, don't tell them who it came from. And then the day after Christmas, Boxing Day, Cratchit comes in 15 minutes late and Scrooge is like, that's it. And he pretends to be angry and then says, that's it. I'm giving you a raise. And, you know, and right. Bob Cratchit's like freaked out and he grabs the poker from the fireplace. He's like, I don't know what's wrong with you, but I'm going to defend myself. He's like, no, really. I'm okay. It's, you know, I have the Christmas spirit. So interesting and good. And the Ghost of Christmas Future was not scary and it was not dragged out. They often drag that part out for some reason. So it was good. It was pretty good. And it opened with a different scene of him at Marley's funeral.
I liked that as an interpretation because, you know, the first line of the story is, to begin with, Marley was dead as a doornail. And right. So that this kind of gets the, like, Marley is for sure dead. We're watching him be lowered into the ground. We know he's dead.
Yes. And there's a discussion of what dead as a doornail means versus why not doorknob or door knocker, which then makes that connection to when Marley's face shows up in the door knocker.
I liked that, too. That was kind of playful and fun.
Right. So, and I just felt like this Scrooge, I don't know, he felt less of a caricature, which I know Dickens wrote Scrooge as a caricature. But this Scrooge, I mean, it felt like he was less just mean for mean's sake. He just was a man who got so subsumed into his goals, his ambition, and, you know, his desire to not be poor, that he just forgot to be human in a way.
Right.
It was a different kind of Scrooge. And even like with his peers, with other businessmen, he wasn't like rah, rah, rah. He was, you know, he was with his peers, so it was a little different. He might have been reserved, but that's it. Not, you know, he wasn't very happy, but that was it. Anyway, I enjoyed that. It was good. I bought it on iTunes, so we have it. I still think my favorites are the Albert Finney Scrooge, which is the musical, and the old one with Alistair Sim, I think his name is, the black and white one. Those two. I also have a soft spot for the George C. Scott version. And of course, you can't miss the Muppet Christmas Carol with Michael Caine playing it straight could be against Muppets. Like he doesn't hold back. He doesn't wink at the camera. He is Scrooge through and through, playing opposite Muppets. It is really good. So it's hard to pick. This is also good. Anyway, the other thing I watched is The Wheel of Time, first season one ended. So I've watched the whole season one. I haven't read the books. I felt it kind of abrupt. I know that it's not the whole story. There's a lot more to the story, but I felt like it kind of ended abruptly and a little confused. They're condensing a 15 book series into a couple of seasons. And so, you know, they're necessarily leaving a lot out. And so I think I might need to read at least the first book to make sure I know what's going on. I've gone from the other direction, like with the Expanse series, where I read the books before I watched the series, and I can see how they're leaving a lot out of the filmed version. So,
right.
Yeah. So what were you watching?
Let's see. On Christmas Day itself, I had a very strange pick. I watched Odd Thomas, which is based on a novel by Dean Koontz. I really, really like Dean Koontz's Odd Thomas series. They're kind of supernatural horror, but Koontz has this like deep level of, I don't know, spiritual reality. Like his bad is bad, his good is good. And I really feel like there's a depth of
understanding of the spiritual world.
Yeah, a depth of the understanding of sort of the actual nature of the spiritual warfare. It's, you know, it's exaggerated because it's sort of supernatural thriller. But I feel like he gets what makes good good and what makes bad bad. And it's not just like, you know, winking at the bad. It's like truly evil. Anyway, Odd Thomas sees dead people kind of like the kid in The Sixth Sense. But he's a short order cook who living in a small town in, I think, California. And he's got, you know, he's trying to stop the bad guys, warned about this apocalypse by ghosts. And it's just, it was really good. It was a really faithful adaptation of the novel. And I love his character. I hope they do the whole series because it was a really, I don't know, I don't want to say fun because it's really dark in times and it's kind of gruesome, but it was good.
Hmm. And then the other thing you watch is about as far from that as we could get.
Right. The other thing, I've just finished watching season one of All Creatures Great and Small, which I remember reading those books when I was, you know, like 10 or 12, and I haven't read them since. But I remember liking the series as a kid. Mostly all I remembered was that he delivered an awful lot of animal babies, and like the details about that were eye-opening as a kid. The BBC series is really good. I really loved all the actors, and this story is just very, I don't know, wholesome.
Yeah.
It's heartwarming. It's
about a guy who works as a vet for both large and small animals.
Right. He's
in the British countryside.
Yeah. It's set like after World War One, like between the wars, I think. And he's Scottish, and he goes to the Yorkshire countryside and small town working for an already established vet. He's just finished his schooling, and he's a city boy who's never really lived in the country, but he fell in love with animals because they had like an animal husbandry program at his school. And so he's got this sort of baptism by fire into rural English life and taking care of animals. And I don't know. They're good stories.
Mm.
And,
yeah. And so recommended for kids?
Older kids?
Older teens?
I mean, there's, like I said, there are details about like animals giving birth that get a little bit
particular,
specific. It's earthy. Let's just say that. And he doesn't shy away from medical details.
Okay.
But it's good. I mean, they're
high school.
Yeah. I mean, I think I read them in junior high.
Okay.
Bella just finished reading the series, and she really liked it a lot.
Okay.
She likes animal stories. I'm not really a big animal story person, but I don't know. James Herriot's good.
Yeah.
He's a really good storyteller, and, it's kind of a world, like a world that's not there anymore.
Mm. So I finished a book. I finished reading the latest Tom Clancy book, Chain of Command, which was pretty good. Well, you know, in the lines with things. It was written by Mark Cameron of, you know, Tom Clancy died a few years ago. And so they have some ghostwriters. I don't know if they call them ghostwriters. Their name's right on the cover. But
yeah, it's not really ghosts.
People have taken up the mantle and are writing the books in his name. And it was pretty good. It basically features a kidnapping of the First Lady. So they had to deal with the kidnapping First Lady. And there were some good aspects of it. Lately, one thing I've noticed with a lot of these books, especially the Clancy books, is they have this long, drawn out approach to the major conflict, the big thing, the kidnapping. And then from that, it wraps up like so quick. Like, that's it. Like the final confrontation with the bad guys is like, boom, 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 we're done. Like, two pages. The snipers shoot from the distance and they kill the bad guys, and now it's all over. It's like, that's it. Like,
anticlimactic.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know if I'm expecting something more of like a cinematic, where the set piece of the film is that final battle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt like it should have taken up more of the book. So there's that. There's also, even from a plot point of view, so the one of the premises of the Tom Clancy universe is that President Jack Ryan has this sort of off the books operation outside the government that is probably illegal, but where it's a black ops organization that does spy stuff that even the CIA can't do. Okay. And his son is actually on the team anyway. And so they're this highly skilled elite team of special operators and spies, which has been great. It's been fun. And then in this one, you had the group that was kidnapping the First Lady was almost their bad guy equivalent. This mercenary team of super elite mercenaries. And I'm like, oh, this could be cool. If this is a thing going to be over a course of several books, they're nemesis. I don't want to spoil the ending, but that's not going to happen. So I'm like, oh, that sort of feels like a waste, but yeah. So I mean, obviously the you know, they resolve things at the end of this, but yeah, it was okay. So I am reading another book now, but I don't know if I'll finish it this week. And so that probably is that Clancy one is the last one in my Goodreads challenge. So Goodreads.com, a lot of people use it to keep track of their books. It's owned by Amazon, so obviously it's a way for them to promote selling books. And they have a challenge every year. Like at the beginning of the year, I'm going to read so many books, and then you keep track. And at the end of the year, you see how you did, you see how your friends did. I've been doing it. I did one in 2011 where I only read a couple books and I didn't really keep up with it. But from 2015 to this year, I've done it continuously. And at first, the first year was 30 books and I read 32. So I upped it to 32 books. I read 32. So they upped it to 35 books. I read 35. Then in 2018, I only got 31 of 35. 2019, 30 of 35. Last year, I hit 43. that was the Dresden Files.
Right.
Yeah, that put me over the top. But this year, I only read 22 books.
Wow.
That's the least books I've read in a long time in a year. So I want to, part of that is, I think the last 3 months have just really disrupted my schedule of things. But also, even before that, I was way behind. I was reading a Brandon Sanderson book at the beginning of this year.
Uh-huh.
And that always takes forever. Those right. books are huge. So that should count for like two, three books right there. But, I'm going to just keep my goal still at 35, and I'm going to try to do more reading. One of my values is I like reading, and it's something I want to do. I want to do more of. I have all of these books on my list of books I want to read. And it just bothers me that I make these lists. I even buy the books and I have a hard time getting the books read. So it's become more important to me to read. And I can't read a lot of books if I'm just reading at bedtime because I fall asleep. I have to make time
right.
when I'm awake and I'm up and about to read. So,
I signed up for the challenge and I can't remember how many books I signed up to read. I didn't stop keeping track, but I kind of lost track in the last couple of months. I think I could piece together the total number of books that I read. I have to sit down and do that, though.
What makes the difference is I read nearly all my books. Like 99.9% of the books I read are on Kindle.
Right.
And so it automatically keeps track.
Yeah, I have to go in and add. And I usually don't remember to add every book as I'm reading it, but I kind of go back and add them in batches. Which makes my Goodreads look kind of weird because it looks like I'm reading all these books all at once.
Right.
I definitely exceeded my goal. I set my goal kind of low because I didn't know what I was.
It says going here to hit. Your goal was 46. You was 40 and you read 46. So you've recorded 46 anyway.
I think that I've read a few more than that. Mm-hmm. So I definitely reached the goal that I'd set. Like I said, 40 was fairly low for me, but I wanted to be able to meet my goal if I was gonna set one.
Right. So yeah. So it's fun to keep track. I like to quantify things, to gamify some things. You can overdo it. But
I like to keep track and do post reviews as I read on my blog, and I kept that up for the first half of the year, and then like I think I got through like June or July and then stopped.
Yeah.
And I'd like to go back and at least write up some of my favorites, because I have read some books in the second half of the year that I really loved and I would love to
share.
I have not had a lot of time and energy for blogging this year.
Right.
It's just not happened.
So that's what we've been reading and watching. I want to talk a little bit about Midnight Mass and today, the Feast of the Holy Family. So at Midnight Mass, Father Matt, our pastor, he started off by saying that, you know, he thinks people are getting to know him, that he's a military man. He's a former Marine officer. Like before he became a priest, he was in the Marines. And then even as a priest, he's a Navy Reserve chaplain with Marines. So he's very, very Marine guy. And he likes to watch military documentaries. And he said he was watching recently this one about the Coast Guard up in Alaska in the Bering Sea and the rescues. And he was talking about there was this rescue of a, there was this big fishing boat, 45 sailors on it, 45 fishermen that went down, 45 guys in the water. And they sent the helicopter out. So it's one helicopter at the time. They were sending more, but at first it was just the one helicopter. It includes a rescue diver. This is a guy whose job it is to jump out of the helicopter, whatever the weather, you know, whatever the waves are like, what day or night, how cold it is, jumps in the water, helps the people they're rescuing get into the rescue basket and that gets hauled up into the helicopter. So they get there and there's 45 guys in the water and he dives in the dark and starts to get them in. And he's like, I can't leave the sailors here while I fly off of the helicopters and drop these guys off and come back. So he tells the pilot, you know, we'll take an extra person in my place. And then you take them. I'll stay with these guys. And then you come back.
Okay.
And he, you know, he herds them together. He keeps them calm. He keeps track of them till the helicopter comes. And they, you know, they make a whole bunch of, they can only carry like six or seven guys. So it's like eight different trips. It takes forever. But finally, he's the last one out of the water. And they go back. And he says, Father Matt says, it made me think that Christmas is like that. And he's like, it's weird, but Christmas is like a rescue mission. And Jesus is the rescue diver who's diving out of the helicopter into the darkness and uncertainty of this world and puts his life on the line for us, scared, in the dark, you know, afraid of, you know, drowning in our sin and everything else. And he takes our hand, straps us in the rescue basket, sends us up to salvation, one by one by one. And it's like, you know, that I thought that was a pretty good analogy.
That's a really good analogy. I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I've seen similar analogies before, but the specificity of that one is really good.
That was really good. Then today, on the Feast of the Holy Family, it was again, happened to be Father Matt, and it was the finding of Jesus in the temple. And he was talking about how this gospel really showcases family virtues, you know, the virtues that we want to inculcate in our families. And he outlined, enumerated them as the virtues of obedience. Jesus went off and was obedient to his mother and father from that point on. Forgiveness. Mary and Joseph forgive Jesus for scaring the heck out of them.
Right.
And love, which is obvious, the love among them. And then he talked about how the Holy Trinity is the family that the Holy Family and our families are modeled on. So it was good. It was a good homily. And then you had a different priest for your Mass on Christmas Day.
Yeah, we had a visiting priest on Christmas Day, and
if you don't remember, that's fine.
I swear I was paying attention.
You were operating about 3 hours sleep, so it's hard. Yeah, long term
memory just didn't happen. I mean, I remember it being good.
Yeah,
I could not report well. If I'd, you know, stopped and written down like what I remembered immediately afterward, I probably could have written some stuff, but right. I did not take notes.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I'd be surprised if there were more than a handful of moms of kids under the age of 18 who got more than a couple hours sleep on Christmas night. So yeah, that's fine.
It was really nice though, going to a Christmas Day Mass with just me and Anthony.
Yes.
It was cozy. It was friendly, and I felt like it was a really nice time to spend with him.
Mm-hmm.
So that was lovely.
Yeah.
We got the pew with the wonky kneeler though, so we were rocking back and forth. We always end up in that pew.
I try to avoid it because I'm usually the one who picks the pews when we go in. Mm-hmm. I'm usually the first one, and I try not to get that pew. I hate that pew. Yeah, man. All right, so let's wrap things up. We want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including John D., Paul J., Albert V., Mary B., and Thomas Z. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. We'd love to hear from you. What was your Christmas like? How was your Christmas? What'd you eat? What'd you get for presents? What'd you do? You can let us know by commenting at sqpn.com/bets. That's BETTS. Or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Or send an email to bets, BETTS, at sqpn.com. And any links from our discussion, including maybe links to books or movies, we will put in our show notes at sqpn.com. Be sure to join the StarQuest fan club by texting StarQuest to 66866. That's StarQuest, one word, to 66866, and you get on our email list and get some cool emails from us. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest. Hi, everyone. This is Dom Bettinelli, CEO of StarQuest, with a special message as we approach the Christmas season. This past year, the StarQuest Network has continued to expand our mission of exploring the intersection of faith and pop culture through our many entertaining and informative programs. Now we need your generous financial support to reach new audiences with more of the life-changing and uplifting programming we've been creating for more than a decade. That's why it's very important that we hear from you this Advent and Christmas, the time when nonprofits receive most of their support for the year. If you are already a supporter of StarQuest, we thank you and ask you to prayerfully consider increasing your support at this time. If you're not yet a supporter, please become one now. Every gift counts. Could you give $15 or even just $10 per month? Whatever level of support you can offer, please show your support for SQPN this Christmas. And remember that your gifts may be tax deductible. Just go to sqpn.com/give. That's sqpn.com/give. May God bless you this Advent, and may you have a blessed Christmas season.